questions before we proceed? Excellent. Okay, our first presentation then is titled, What Are the Health Education Strategies Used by Physical Therapists to Promote Behavior Modification in People with Lifestyle-Related Conditions, a scoping review, and our presenters today are Julie, Rochelle, Erin, Andrea, and Jason.
Okay, good morning everyone. Thanks for coming to our presentation. Okay. Let me start with the outline of what we're going to talk about today. First of all, we're going to take a look at the background and basically a discussion of why our research is considered really important and why we're doing what we're doing. Next, we're going to take a look at the methods, including our search strategy, data abstraction, and quality assessment. Then we're going to go into more detail, look at all the results that we have found, and then move to the discussion where we'll talk about some of our limitations of our study and future implications for more research. Okay, so to begin the background, basically the current healthcare system in Canada was developed with prevention and treatment of illness and disease as a focus, and an increase in the number, or increase in the life expectancy can be attributed to what this healthcare system was attempting to improve. However, a new wave of health-threatening conditions have come forward that our current healthcare system kind of seems a little unequipped to address, and we're going to refer to these as lifestyle-related conditions or diseases. To define, a lifestyle-related condition or disease is a health disorder caused by modifiable behavior, and they include things such as obesity, cardiovascular disease, cerebrovascular disease, cancer, type 2 diabetes, and smoking-related diseases. Recently, these disorders have cost billions in direct and indirect healthcare costs, not only nationally, but around the world, and threaten to exhaust a lot of our resources if we don't act accordingly. To give you more of an idea of the impact that some of these lifestyle conditions are having on our economy, we've included a few statistics. Looking at obesity, as of 2005, the annual healthcare costs had reached, or related to obesity, had reached $4.3 billion in Canada alone, and 2 years later, over half of Canadian population were considered overweight or obese. In regards to cardiovascular and cerebrovascular disease, it was noted in 2009 that more than 1.3 million Canadians report having heart disease as diagnosed by a health professional, and more than 300,000 people are living in Canada with the effects of a stroke. Between the year 2000 and 2010, annual direct healthcare costs associated with diabetes have increased by $5.9 billion in Canada. And it's estimated that by the year 2020, more than 3.7 million Canadians will be living with the condition. Although a lot of the anti-smoking campaigns have been able to reduce a lot of the smoking rates around Canada, many individuals still cope with trying to give it up. And basically nearly 5 million Canadians currently still smoke, and this results in about $4.4 billion being spent annually to treat smoking-related health diseases and conditions. And lastly, it's expected that 40% of Canadian women and 45% of Canadian men will develop cancer within their lifetime, and it's expected that cancer will be the cause of a quarter of all deaths in Canada. So given these stats and the effects that that these lifestyle conditions are having on our healthcare system, it is imperative that all healthcare professionals become part of the solution. Research has demonstrated that healthcare professionals can influence behavior through a lot of counseling techniques. And given the treatment time and professional relationships that physiotherapists have with their clients, we are actually in an ideal position to foster a lot of this change. There are many studies that we found that actually say that physiotherapists are in this ideal position. However, much of the research also show that we still use a biomedical model of remediation rather than prevention, and focus on just trying to fix things rather than prevent things. Adding to this issue is another paradox where patients often don't see physiotherapists as primary prevention specialists, and actually don't often go to a physio until after an injury or an issue has occurred, well beyond the time of prevention. where prevention will be available. So with this information in mind, it is paramount that a change in the role of healthcare service providers is required. Healthcare professionals, especially us, including us as physios, must evolve our role in healthcare towards prevention and self-management rather than just focusing entirely on remediation. Therefore, the purpose of our article and our research was to scope the literature to determine what healthcare strategies are being used by physiotherapists to promote behavior modification in people with lifestyle-related conditions. And next year, I'm just going to talk about a lot of our methods and strategies.
So in the next few slides, we're going to cover our search strategy. Our team started out by developing a list of keywords through group discussion suggestions from our supervisor, Elizabeth Dean, and librarian, Charlotte Beck, and by reviewing articles suggested to us by Dr. Dean to mine keywords. We then input our terms on Medline and map them to appropriate medical subject heading terms. We organized our search into blocks containing related terms, labeling them as education strategies, physical therapy, and lifestyle-related conditions. Terms within each block were summed using the Boolean operator OR, and then the blocks were combined with the operator AND to find articles that contain references to all three categories. Following the initial run on Medline, search terms were carried over to CINAHL, PsycINFO, Embase, and the Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews, where terms were modified as needed. We also performed some reference mining of relevant articles, meaning that we went through the reference list of published articles deemed useful during the full text evaluation to find if any of their references were appropriate. We had initially planned to search the grade literature for articles, but reconsidered when we recognized that our review is meant to reflect what clinical practitioners would find if they were looking for educational strategies guidelines. These searches resulted in 4,047 potentially relevant articles, which we then screened database by title and abstract. Our basic four-point screening criteria asked, first, whether the research used an adult patient population. Secondly, if one of the six targeted lifestyle-related conditions was being investigated. Thirdly, whether the intervention included mention of any form of education. And finally, whether a physical therapist was involved. Following the application of the screening criteria, we were left with 92 potentially relevant articles for full-text evaluation. At this stage, two team members reviewed the list for duplicates and then obtained each full-text article. They excluded articles that did not meet the inclusion screening criteria using the information presented in the full-text and then ran data abstraction on the articles confirmed as relevant. Okay, so the next step of our review process was to abstract the data from our included articles. But when we were reading them over, we found that most of the articles included in our search did not fit the traditional PICO outline, so we altered our data abstraction form to be more probing in nature. We asked many open-ended questions and looked at some features that we thought would be important to an educational study, and from this information, we were aiming at creating a narrative synthesis. Since our project was scoping in nature, a main feature that we focused on was how the study ranked on in the Oxford levels of evidence. And you can see that that's the first item on our data abstraction form here. We wanted to examine not only the information in the articles, but also the strength of that information. Next, we assessed the quality of each included paper using the PEDRO scale, which is validated and physiotherapy directed. We found that no studies were rated to have good methodological quality, most scored fair to poor, and particularly those with other study designs outside of RCTs. So for example, we had a quasi-experimental study design where there was a lack of a random assignment to the experimental groups, and a prospective interventional study where there was actually no control group because it was unethical in that situation. And here's just a shot of the PEDRO quality assessment form. So from our results, we ended up having a final number of 8 articles that we used. 5 were retrieved from the searches in the databases that Jason and Aaron were
had done, and three we did in reference mining, where we searched articles that we thought would be relevant to our paper and looked at their references listed there. So we found that there were three randomized controlled trials, three surveys, two of which two of the surveys reported different results from the same experiment of Finnish physiotherapists, one quasi-experimental study and one prospective interventional study, as mentioned before. And here's a list of our articles, the full citation of which can be found in our reference list. So despite the alarming threat to our population's health and the rising associated costs, as Jason had mentioned previously, we found that there were no studies performed in Canada. Most studies were from Europe, two from Australia, and the sole study from North America was coming from the United States. Four papers focused on patients as participants, looking at the effect of an element of education in patients with lifestyle-related conditions. For example, tracking whether patients lost weight with exercise counseling. Three of our papers looked at physical therapists as the participants, using self-reports and examining roles, topics, and perceptions of education within the physical therapy scope. And one paper looked at outcomes from both the physical therapists and the patients. So next, Michelle is going to go into more details about the interventions that were used in all the studies. Okay, so since the primary focus of our study was to describe the educational strategies used by physiotherapists, I'm going to break down in detail what we found, mostly in the methods of the studies and in some of the discussion and results of the survey studies that were included in our review. So overwhelmingly, the literature focused on physical therapists as health educators for exercise-based interventions. The goal of these interventions was either for increasing physical activity for better health or to reduce risk factors for lifestyle-related conditions. Since we conducted a scoping review that aimed to describe all the educational strategies that are currently used by physical therapists, we identified a long interrelated list of educational strategies and components that are kind of listed here. For ease of comparison and discussion, we grouped the components under the five headings shown here. Please note that any one strategy was never used alone, and that each paper described the use of combinations of the components that I'm about to discuss. So the review literature mentioned the use of two health education theories. The trans-theoretical model of change theory was used in three of the included studies. This model postulates that exercise behavior change moves through five stages. The first is the pre-contemplation stage, where participants are inactive with no intention of changing. In the contemplation stage, people are inactive, but they intend to change in the medium term, whereas those in the preparation stage are also inactive, but they intend to change in the short term. Those in the action stage, however, they have undertaken some regular physical activity in the last 6 months, and those in the final maintenance stage have been physically active for more than 6 months. So the other theory that was included in our reviewed articles was the 5A strategy for health behavior counseling. This was used in one study and provides a framework for health education where physical therapists address the agenda, assess, advise, assist, and arrange follow-up. The next category of educational strategies that we identified was the timing of the intervention. Physical therapists use pre-assessments, post-assessments, and follow-ups to deliver their health education interventions. Four articles describe physical therapists using pre-assessments to measure strengths, exercise capacity, and anthropometrics, which include height, weight, and other measurements. This data was gathered to be used for outcome measures or to individually tailor exercise programs to meet the abilities of patients. Four studies also identify that physical therapists use pre-assessments to determine previous physical activity habits. In three articles, physios pre-assessed stage of change, and in one article, they collected information about the patient's previous smoking habits. When asked about pre-assessment, physical therapists in Finland reported that they were more comfortable with assessment for exercise-related interventions than for general healthy lifestyle counseling. Follow-up also varied greatly between studies. where three only evaluated outcome measures and two other studies provided a more comprehensive telephone or group counseling session. When physiotherapists in Finland were asked about follow-up by Leiticarri and others, more than 60% of professionals surveyed related follow-up as difficult, and only 5% rated this term as easy. Now moving to the next category of educational intervention components, several articles also commented on the structure of educational settings. The most frequently mentioned and most popular session structure type was brief advice and discussion. This refers to educational counseling that is provided as an addendum to treatment session that's used for another purpose. For instance, advice on smoking cessation might be given by a physical therapist to a patient seeing them for a rotator cuff injury. Most physical therapists surveyed by Leiticarri and others reported using brief advice on a daily basis. And when asked about the feasibility of using this strategy, 97% of Australian physical therapists surveyed by Shirley and others considered this to be a feasible strategy. Three studies describe physical therapists using one-on-one counseling, while two employ group counseling sessions. Among the Australian physical therapists surveyed by Shirley and others, 63% thought separate one-on-one consultations would be feasible, and 60% reported that group sessions would be feasible. Now moving on to some of the techniques used by physical therapists. Motivational prompts were mentioned in 5 studies, and the prompts that were used most frequently were health and general fitness enhancement, the prevention of disease and reduction of risks, decreasing symptoms and feeling well, work and functional capacity, and the enjoyment of life and recreation. Other techniques were the identification of barriers and problem solving, which were mentioned in 2 studies. These counseling sessions included the identification of barriers to activity and exploration of strategies to handle threats. Various media was used by physical therapists to deliver educational interventions. Handouts, brochures, and diaries were very popular and were identified in 6 studies. Participants in 3 of these studies were given written handouts of prescribed exercise programs. And in 1 study, participants received brochures and physical activity diaries. Physical therapists in Finland reported handing out written materials in 14% of patient contacts, and the majority gave and explained handouts to patients at least once a week. At follow-up, Sheedy and others asked patients about about the brochures that they were given during the interventions, and only 52% of participants who were given a brochure actually recalled receiving it, and only 40% read it. 80% of those participants who were given an exercise diary recalled receiving it, and the median completion time for these diaries was 3 weeks, though they were given a total possible of 6 weeks to complete the diary. Skills training was another popular technique that was used in 5 studies. In 3 studies, this involved teaching patients proper exercise technique. Physical therapists in Finland reported using skills training in 45% of patient contacts, and most used skills training on a daily basis. Visual models and presentations were also mentioned in 3 articles. One article described how a physical therapy department developed an instructional video to demonstrate proper exercise techniques. Physical therapists in Finland reported using this method of counseling in 23% of patient contacts, and 60% reported using visual models or demonstrations at least once a week. So to give a quick visual of what I just discussed, we created this chart of intervention strategies and studies in which they were used. You can see at a glance that some techniques were very popular, such as brochures and handouts, while others were seldom used, such as diaries. You can also see that while physical therapists in some studies used a broad array of strategies, others used only a few. Julie will now discuss the findings for future research.
Okay, so as Rochelle has just discussed, there were many different educational strategies listed in our review. Something interesting, though, that we found is that although the studies may have mentioned educational strategies and their methods, they didn't discuss what was actually the details of those strategies. So, for example, a study may have listed that brief counseling was used in their methods, but they didn't discuss what was talked about during the counseling. Although we did find the surveys included in our study to have more detail about the methods, it must be remembered that this is self-reported information and not actually a record of observations of what is occurring in physical therapy practice. The survey results, as a result, might not actually represent what is occurring in practice. So as a result, the information uncovered in our review is not sufficient to guide clinical practice. As a result, you'll see that a common theme throughout our discussion is a recommendation for further research to be conducted in this important area to help guide physical therapists in providing the best care to their clients. So almost all of the studies we looked at identified physical therapists as exercise specialists and discussed how we are ideally suited for this role based on our training, our clinical setup, and patient contact characteristics. By reviewing the articles, it was also found that physical therapists may seldomly address other risk factors such as diet or smoking. Although exercise is extremely important in reducing the risk of lifestyle-related conditions, only focusing on exercise is a single-factor approach and does not provide a holistic or all-encompassing way to address these diseases. We believe that physical therapists must broaden the goals and topics of their educational interventions beyond only exercise to effectively reduce the risk of lifestyle-related conditions. Changing the focus of physical therapy interventions to more than just exercise counseling has been recognized in the literature. For example, a systematic review performed by Bodner and Dean looked at the health education strategies used by other health professionals for effective smoking cessation and suggested that these strategies be used by physios. Interestingly, these educational strategies identified by Bodner and Dean were very similar to the educational strategies we found in our review that are used by physical therapists to promote increased physical activity. We recommend, though, that further research be conducted to determine if physios actually have the proper training to utilize these educational strategies that are proven effective by other health professionals, or if possibly a change in the physical therapy curriculum is necessary to evolve our training. So our study found, as Rochelle had mentioned, that brochures are commonly used and favored by physical therapists. One of the studies, though, found that only about half of the participants who received brochures remembered getting them, and even fewer read them. So this information suggests that some of the most favored or convenient educational strategies might not actually be effective. So again, further research must be performed to determine the effectiveness of each educational strategy and to help clinicians guide their practice. So the most important recommendation we can make based on the results of our review is that further research must be completed. First of all, it would be very helpful to have an observational study performed looking at and recording what physios are actually doing in practice and which strategies they are actually using instead of just the self-reported surveys. Next, we need to have research looking at the effectiveness of each educational strategy individually, but also the combinations of the different components of the educational strategies. To help guide clinicians in their practice, the cost effectiveness of each educational strategy should also be looked at. And then lastly, it's important to determine if physios actually have the proper training to utilize the health education strategies used by the other health professionals. So after completing our study, we have identified some limitations that, if altered, may have improved the quality of it. First of all, we found that a limit was applied to our search, ensuring that only full-text articles were retrieved. Also, we did not use an official document to detail the inclusion and exclusion criteria during the full text screening. So in the future, we would remove the full text limits and also use a sheet for each full text screening documenting the inclusion and exclusion criteria. Also, the data abstraction form was not applied to all of the full texts that were screened during that time. Instead, it was only applied and completed on the papers that were included in our study. And lastly, the quality assessment tool selected was not appropriate for all of the studies included in our review. As Andrea mentioned, the Pedro is specifically designed for RCTs, and a different tool may have more accurately reflected the quality of the various study designs in our review. So lastly, we just wanted to thank a few people, Ms. Charlotte Beck for her help in the development of our search strategy. Without her, we would have been lost. And then also to Dr. Elizabeth Dean for her guidance during this review.
They came out already.
Okay, very good. Mark, just let me know, it reminded me about the volume. If you speak loudly, we can still pick you up for the podcast. Thank you very much. Questions, please? Yes.
In your opinion, based on all the literature that you've read for this, do you think that one of the barriers for physical therapists is being confident enough to bring up the issues of smoking cessation or, you know, being overweight? There's the strategies that once you can bring it up to use, but if you go back a step further in terms of even feeling comfortable to address it in the first place, right? So someone has low back pain because they have a lot of weight in the front. Was any of that brought up in the literature? Mm-hmm.
So that was actually a theme that I pulled out when we were doing all the data abstraction and looking at how to synthesize the articles. We chose not to include it in our discussion just because it kind of went beyond the scope of just what physios were doing, but it's a really good point. One study, the Sheedy study that I think you might remember us mentioning that one study looked at whether the lifestyle intervention worked for the participants, and it also pre and post assessed physical therapists. So they provided lifestyle interventions on a group of patients, and then they went and received some training on the physical therapy guidelines in Australia, and they also received some training on how to provide lifestyle interventions, and then they counseled another group of people. That was the quasi-experimental study, that's why it wasn't a real control group. Anyway, they surveyed the physical therapists after that and before, and they found that they were more likely to use educational interventions afterward and counsel on lifestyle behaviors more, and their confidence also increased in their ability to do that, and they were more likely to be able to actually report correctly the physical activity guidelines for their country. So, and there were some other studies that kind of brought up similar themes as to the more confident practitioners are with an educational strategy or their background knowledge, the more likely that they're going to include them in the practice. So it gives really good background for saying that we should definitely be including this in physical therapy curricula, and that it kind of leads to some more research that's needed.
Yes. Just wondering, with the individualized counseling that was given to patients in some of the studies, did the study speculate at all why that may have been, say, more successful than handing out brochures?
Again, as our study is kind of focused on just this complicated list of stuff, it was kind of beyond our scope to look really in depth at the effectiveness of stuff and of different interventions. And there was just not enough, there weren't enough studies that were included so that we could really make any sort of comment on whether or not a technique was more was more effective than another technique. One author commented, the one in the survey study that looked at physios, who said that they found pre-assessment to be difficult. They criticized physios and other health professionals for not doing enough to pre-assess patients, but they didn't really qualify that this was an essential component of an exercise program. They kind of assumed it was. Jason looked at some educational strategies, and I think they discussed that there. They discussed the pre-assessment there.
There's a textbook that you came up with on educational strategies, and they also discuss pre-assessment, but it's hard to comment on the effectiveness.
Yeah, that's a
vague.
Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you guys do any specific
speculation in just your group discussion as to why none of these, why there are no Canadian reviews that have been done, what it was in Canada that way, if there wasn't, you guys have any idea?
Yeah, no, we just found that that was a result, so we didn't really discuss too much about why, perhaps, but it depends also, we were talking about that it depends on the culture and also just the healthcare education system, or sorry, the healthcare system in different areas. So, for example, we found that most of these studies came out of Europe, so perhaps their health education is more focused, perhaps, than in other parts of the world. So.
Did any of the researchers comment on the learning styles of the subjects in line with their interventions?
Mm-hmm. They actually didn't comment on whether they assessed learning styles in particular. And I know we learned that in one of our classes on how to develop effective education strategies. They did assess the trans-theoretical model of change and other ideas about previous levels of physical activity, but they didn't actually tailor exercises to each of the patient preferences, I guess.
And that actually was part of our data abstraction as well, because that is something that we were interested in looking to find. And I guess like one of the things that I found interesting with the brochures is that some of the people provided their patients with brochures and actually talked with them and explained what the brochure said. So it would be interesting to see if reading levels were assessed or anything like that.
I was wondering, this is really good, I'm wondering about what you guys have taken away now for what to embark on actually working, what you guys have taken away for your plans for educational strategies.
Keep an eye out for future research, because we've just recommended it, and hopefully somebody will take that and run with it, and hopefully there'll be research out there that can actually guide our practice, because as it stands, there really isn't anything concrete.
I think something that I will take away is that something that's really convenient for us might not actually help our patients. So we have to think more than just about what we're doing and what we like to do and actually individualize it for our patients.
And just, and additionally, just how important, like after reading all this and having our discussions with Dr. Dean, just how important addressing not only the rotator cuff injury, but looking at the person as a whole and addressing their other lifestyle factors, just how important that is and how the impact of that on our healthcare system and on us as practitioners in the future.
And in addition to what Andrew was saying there, we're also thinking that you know, when you think about going to your dentist twice a year, you go for this, you know, checkup to cleaning and preventative care, and that's just a kind of accepted practice. But few people will come to physios twice a year to make sure that they're meeting their physical activity guidelines or helping stop smoking. So as practitioners, you could almost even start thinking to recommend that a patient might come see you for a separate visit just for lifestyle counseling if you can kind of, you know, make a case for why it's really important.
With your search strategy, you found over 4,000 articles you guys had to sift through. I was just wondering what kind of limits you did have on that, or if there were limits put on your search.
So we actually originally ran the search with three limits. They were to be published in English, they were to be about human subjects, and that they had to be full text. We then revised that strategy with some discussion with the librarian to remove the human limit on it. We probably should have removed the full text one, but that was sort of not caught until later on in the study. So even with the English limit and the full text limit, we still have 4,000. Otherwise, we were looking at approximately 16,000 articles to search through.
I had 25,000 in CINAHL alone. Yeah. I had to bring that down. But Charlotte had mentioned that when we applied the human limit, that something was going on. She said we had to remove it to kind of clear things up, so we removed it. But we probably should remove full text as well, yeah. So I think before we publish, we would have to remove full text and, yeah, excitedly do it all again.
think the problem with why we had to sift through so many articles was due to the nature of our review. Because it's a scoping review and it's never been looked at, we had no idea what was out there for educational strategy, so we had to include terms that would include everything. So we couldn't just say we want to look at this one specific condition and this one specific treatment, because then we would miss potentially everything else.
Can you guys elaborate on why you didn't use any inclusion or exclusion criteria to define?
We did, at the pilot abstract stage, use a basic four-question screening tool. We just didn't actually write down for all 4,000 articles that they met all of them. We just had the list and went through it as we were reading, decided whether it met the criteria. It was sort of a matter of saving trees.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a tally rather than writing a sheet of paper for every single article and having a stack.
So you did have...
Yeah.
Criteria.
It wasn't formally recorded.
You didn't write it down on the sheet.
So the criteria was that it's an adult patient population, that there was some form of education strategy mentioned. It had to be mentioned that a physical therapist was involved in the care. And last lifestyle condition, one of the six targeted ones.
Thank you.
Is scoping review and systematic review the same thing? Or is it a slight difference?
A scoping review aims to kind of catch everything that's out there, whereas a systematic review with the meta-analysis would be catching everything out there, but also being able to have enough homogeneity in the results to compare and kind of evaluate those different things. So ours.
So we couldn't do a meta-analysis because we weren't trying to compare, we were just trying to find what was there. Yeah.
Did you find any differing roles between public and private physical therapists as far as their ability to educate and their kind of different in motivation as far as their returning customers? You can't really tell a customer that, you know, they need to change their lifestyle and that's why they're having their problems. If you want them to come back, if that was a barrier to providing education, maybe a public practice physio would have more ability and maybe more time or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. That was addressed in one article. I believe it was an Australian article, one of the surveys. Not quite sure about that one. I can check it. But they actually found that there was very little difference between the opinions on... It was just asking about their opinions on whether they thought they could counsel on lifestyle conditions. And they said that private practice and public practice, there wasn't a big difference, but if anything, the private practice physios found that it was more feasible to provide that kind of lifestyle counseling that wasn't related to the condition that they were seeing the patient for. And that might just be more of a comment on the health structure of that country and not so much if it would be representative of what's happening in Canada.
Yes.
This might be beyond the scope of your paper, but did you look at the actual patient's reaction to these intervention strategies? Like, did people prefer one method over the other and find it more helpful rather mm-hmm. than one or the other?
It was beyond the scope of our study. Mainly the surveys looked at the views of physios rather than the patients, but it would be very interesting to see and how patients are reacting to something, especially if it's not related to their condition that they're seeing a physio for.
I just wanted to come back to this very important point about did any of them actually address the learner, which is really a relevant point, particularly because we're so culturally diverse and literacy rates are different and the age of our patients and so on. I guess the readiness to change, you know, Prochaska's model sort of at least tries to tap into that at one level. But did any of them sort of hint at that or describe it in their limitations?
Mm-hmm. Well, the stages of change was actually used in that study that looked at the brochures and asked patients if they read the brochures. And their brochures were actually tailored to meet the stages of change of that participants, and they were still abysmally received by the patients. Another study also looked at the one that looked at patients before and after and physios before and after in that kind of quasi-experimental study. And the physios in that, when they surveyed the physios before and after they received their educational intervention, they reported actually that they noticed there were more the barriers to health education changed after they got educated on more health education strategies. And so that after after they knew more about health education, they noticed that it was language barriers were more of an issue when developing intervention strategies. So I think maybe it could be said that they had more insight on what really a good educational strategy required.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, language is one element, but language also defines your cultural context. Mm-hmm. So for example, we're in a highly individualistic society, and physical therapy is very Western in many ways, and it's all about the individual and words like self-control, self-management, self-efficacy. But in other languages like Arabic, there's no word that's equivalent to self-anything, you know, self-control, self-management. And it's all about the collective. So I think that's another element. When we hand people brochures, it's all because we're assuming that they're, you know, individualistically minded and that they're going to say, yes, I'm going to do this for myself. But I think also we have to think about that layer within our own culture and across cultures. And when I'm in the Arab world, for example, you know, it's the will of God. I remember having a treating a 40-year-old woman in, and she was a grandmother, being a mother very early, and had some minor procedure in hospital and going around trying to get her up after this minor surgery. And I've lived my life, I don't need to do this, if I die now it's okay. So, you know, I think that we really do have to appreciate other people's perspectives, not that we walk away. And the other point that I wanted to mention, you know, we did restrict this to lifestyle-related conditions, and I know in your search you found many other applications of patient education. But I know in my own practice, as I deal with many, many, you know, multiple people with multiple comorbidities, that I'm beginning to see myself more as a health educator, you know, whether it's related to their gait or to an exercise program or helping them be referred to for smoking cessation counseling. Do you have any reflections on that as you read through and the diversity and application of the education applications that you read? And did it appear across all conditions, orthopedics, neurology?
Well, I think one of the problems was screening out that in our inclusion criteria that it had to be related to one of the six conditions. Mm-hmm, yeah. We missed a lot because, I mean, if you look at an article that was talking about osteoarthritis of the knee, well, unfortunately that article would have been excluded, but there could have been a component to it being, hey, you lose 10 pounds, mm-hmm. you do some sort of diet counseling, you do some sort of exercise counseling.
Precisely.
We missed that. And so I think it would be an even more massive undertaking if we had included conditions that were that have components of those lifestyle related conditions. But I think narrowing it with the six that we have sort of made it a little bit more manageable. But in reality it does need to be broadened.
Thank you. Any remaining questions? Great, thank you very much.